This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, or whatever your time zone across this beautiful planet Earth of ours. Welcome back, everybody, to the People Speak radio show. I'm your host for tonight, Steve Johnson. The People Speak show normally airs every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific and 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS radio network. You can participate during the show with call-in questions for our guests, toll-free in the USA and Canada on 1-888-429-5471. Or you can join us live in the government and politics section of Pal Talk, the largest free chat program in the world where we have our virtual radio room, The People Speak Show, that anyone may join to participate in the show. This is a fantastic show tonight. I'm more excited than Pat Robertson stuck in a well full of money. We're talking to a very special guest right here, a former U.S. Army chaplain that resigned in April over his growing concerns about the Obama drone policies. We are talking tonight to the brave Captain Chaplain Chris Antal about why he decided to resign his post in protest. Welcome to the People Speak show, Chaplain Chris, sir.
Hi, Steve. I'm glad to be with the People Speak.
Fantastic. We'll be taking audience questions after the first half hour, but my first question to you is, although you've always been a self-confessed pacifist, what was the final straw in your decision to quit the service?
Yeah, well, Steve, I haven't always been a pacifist. I'm in my mid-40s now, and up until I was about 30, I thought I was a pacifist. I have a more nuanced view that has developed in the last couple decades, and I believe there is a time to kill, and the only moral justification to kill is to protect the innocent from certain harm. The choice to resign, I can explain that, but first I would need to say why I joined the military in the first place. I'm a minister by profession, and I was driven by a sense of compassion after September 11th to care for the wounded, and a sense of duty as an American citizen to carry my fair share of the war effort. And so I thought I could do that well as a chaplain. There was another part to your question. What was that?
Oh, what was the final straw in your decision to quit the service?
Sure. Well, it was an ongoing conflict I began to detect. I would call it a role conflict between my role as a military officer and my role as a chaplain, a religious leader. And there has always been a tension between those two roles as long as the chaplaincy has existed, I believe, since the Revolutionary War. For me, that just became irreconcilable. I would say that it was a process, but certainly this year, the administration's decision to fund airdrop nuclear cruise missile and to invest billions of dollars into the modernization of our nuclear arsenal was a part of the breaking point, as you put it. And then, as you mentioned, the drone program has been an ongoing concern ever since I witnessed drones during my deployment to Afghanistan in 2012. I continued to be hopeful that the administration and the president, President Obama, would follow through with his commitment to bring more transparency and accountability to that program. That was a commitment he publicly made in a speech at the National Defense University in May of 2013, about 3 months after I redeployed. I was hopeful that he would follow through with that commitment. And even the Stimson Center for Drone Policy released 8 recommendations in 2014 to improve the administration's transparency and accountability. However, this past February, the Stimson Center released a report card on the progress of our administration in implementing the recommendations. And the Stimson Center gave the administration a D for transparency and an F for accountability. And that was, I would say, the final straw, together with the upgrading and modernization of our nuclear arsenal. I just decided that my role as a minister was more important, and I needed to speak out of conscience than my role to continue serving as an officer. And that's when I wrote my letter of resignation.
In your time of your service in Afghanistan, have you seen more and more that the American military is relying on these drones to do their killing, more so than actually taking a boots-on-the-ground approach?
Well, my time in Afghanistan was limited to arrived in September of 2012 and left in February of 2013. I left early because I decided to speak out of conscience, and that led to I was investigated and reprimanded and released from active duty 3 months early. Well, there's no question that the use of these drones has escalated significantly under the Obama administration. I think that's pretty much a known fact. Whether the use of these drones, in terms of numbers, I mean, I don't know how many people we've killed with the ground forces. The Bureau of Investigative Journalism has released recently a number of 7,143 people killed with drone strikes in four countries. That would be Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia, and Afghanistan. 2,032 in Afghanistan. I think we probably killed a lot more than that with other weapons, including ground troops and other airstrikes in Afghanistan. But still, the number 2,032 is that's a lot of lives just in Afghanistan. So there's no question that this program has escalated significantly under this administration. And as far as I can tell, it shows little sign of decreasing. It seems to be the new weapon of choice in Washington, and probably the new cash cow of the military-industrial complex.
And, of course, that number of those who have been killed in Afghanistan does not even take into account the fact that people are dying, even today, from depleted uranium that's being used in some of the warheads. Is that not true?
Well, I really can't comment on that. I don't know how many people are dying from depleted uranium.
How did some of your Army buddies react to the news that you were going to resign? Were they kind of shocked, or did they see it coming?
Well, I've been a reservist for most of my military career, which means I'm not entrenched in the military system, and I don't have a whole lot of Army buddies, quite frankly. My full-time work is in ministry. I serve a congregation, and for most of my military career, it's been a part-time work. I can say that when I submitted my resignation, most of the people that contacted me that knew me from the service were supportive. However, some weren't, and I've lost friends that I thought I had because of the stand I've taken.
Right. Well, what sort of things did you see in Afghanistan that made you question what you were doing?
Well, I witnessed drones for the first time standing on the flight line at Kandahar Airfield. The flight line is where the drones launch and land. And because I was an Army chaplain, it was my duty to honor the dead. And we would do that in what's called the dignified transfer ceremony. And that would take place on the flight line. And that's when a casket of a service member who's been killed is transported usually first in a military vehicle and then carried across the tarmac, it's called, in a flag-draped casket. And chaplains support that dignified transfer ceremony by our presence on the flight line. As the casket is carried across the tarmac and up the ramp of an Air Force cargo plane, there's music, there's taps is played, a chaplain says a prayer, reads the name of the soldier or Marine, and says a few words about the surviving family members. So it was in the context of that ceremony that I witnessed the drones on the horizon launching and landing. Some of them were surveillance, others were armed with Hellfire missiles. So that was a moment of, I would call, cognitive dissonance, where I was experiencing a deep, emotionally powerful ceremony to honor the American dead, while on the horizon, I was seeing this technology, this new weapon that is depersonalizing and dehumanizing. Wondering who are they targeting? Who are we targeting? Who are we killing with these? And who's naming them? And who's honoring those lives? So that was a moment of real questioning. The time I would stand at those ceremonies and. It led to my own inquiry and research through whatever reports and publicly available information I could find on the drone strikes. Most of it was non-governmental sources. And that led to some crisis of conscience. I read a report from Stanford and NYU Law School called Living Under Drones, Death, Injury, and Trauma to Civilians in Pakistan from U.S. drone strikes. That was released the month I arrived in Afghanistan, and I read it, and it was disturbing. It caused me great anguish. Apart from that, in terms of other things that I witnessed that disturbed me, I met Afghans who had served our military with loyalty, risking their lives to assist with the translation and with the hopes that our government would follow through on promises to grant them refugee visas. It was a promise made by Congress through the Afghan Allies Protection Act. Well, I met these Afghan interpreters, and I met some who'd been waiting years for that promise to be delivered, some who had lost friends, who'd been killed and targeted and killed because of their association with the U.S. military. That was another moment of heartbreak where I started to question our integrity as a country for the following through on the promises that we make. And I started to wonder how much we really cared for the people we were claiming to be there to help. And then, of course, there was the experience of being a chaplain to soldiers and having soldiers come to me ready to kill themselves because of things they'd done or seen, and just torn with guilt and anguish. As a chaplain, I tend to see the worst of it, so I admit to my own bias perspective, but that's part of what the chaplains do, is we carry the stories, and often the most painful ones.
You know, having resigned the way you did, many people would have labeled you as some kind of anti-war whistleblower. Does that sort of label sit well with you, being called a whistleblower?
Well, I never sought it out. In ministry, we speak of our pastoral role, which is caring for the wounded, nurturing the living, and we also speak of our prophetic role, which is speaking truth to power. I think the prophetic role of a minister is a role that could be called the role of a whistleblower, but it has a deep and rich heritage within the Hebrew Scriptures with the prophet Isaiah and Amos and Micah. and it continues within the New Testament. So there is a tradition within ministry and also within my denomination of prophetic witness and speaking truth to power. You could call that whistleblowing. I call it something else, but I think essentially it's the same thing.
And of course, not many people or pastors, not many church-going reverends are actually standing up to the whole industrial war machine. Have you been singled out by anyone for your stance on being so anti-war?
Well, anti-war is a label that you're putting on me. As I said at the very beginning, I have a more nuanced view, and I'm not a pacifist. I'm not advocating for the abolishment of the military. I believe that the military exists and ought to exist for the purpose of national defense. And I believe that there is a time that we ought to use the military in situations where force is necessary to restrain violence, especially violence that targets the innocent and the defenseless. The question about being singled out, and you're mentioning the silence of the faith community, is a source of distress, although I think it's difficult to speak in general terms about the faith community as a whole. I think that there are movements within religious communities that do speak out and have been prophetic and have resisted, and often those voices are drowned out in our society by the preponderance of, I would call them the evangelicals, who really endorse what I would call American militarism. There has been some pushback, but I would say for the most part, I've gotten a lot of support for speaking out as a religious leader, although I can't say that I've gotten that support from within the chaplaincy in the military. That support has come from my colleagues and other clergy from other denominations who have stood with me and continue to stand with me and are concern for American militarism generally and the drone program in particular.
You mentioned earlier that it is necessary for a country to have an army for the purpose of national defense. You can't really honestly believe that America is in Afghanistan and Pakistan for any kind of national defense at all. Would you agree with that?
Well, I don't accept the argument that the administration has made ever since the Bush administration of preemptive war. The premise that we can launch a preemptive strike in order to prevent an attack on our own country, I don't believe that this meets the criteria of necessity. It, to me, is an aggressive war. It is a war of choice and opportunity. I would agree that that the wars that this country is currently engaged in my assessment, don't meet the criteria of necessity for national defense. I don't see any necessity in targeting people with killer drones halfway around the world who might perhaps at some point in the unspecific future be some kind of threat to some American or some American interest somewhere. That doesn't cut it for me.
Just for those who don't know, these drones are actually given their targets from what's called a presidential daily kill list. Do you believe that that is wrong in every sense, shape, and form as a Christian, that nobody should be able to make a kill list to want to assassinate somebody? Do you think that's wrong, that Obama is doing that?
Well, I'm a Unitarian Universalist minister, and I don't personally identify as a Christian. We are non-Trinitarian in our belief.
Oh, I see. I beg your pardon.
What matters to us is, we would say, ethical living is the supreme witness of religion, not your dogma or creed. But just to clarify, as far as the president's kill list, what troubles me about that, and there's not much I really know because so much is secret, but the very idea of the president having a kill list, I find outrageous. It seems to undermine the democratic process. Democracy means checks and balances. It means oversight, and having a kill list enables the president to become the judge, jury, and executioner, and blows checks and balances, blows oversight up in smoke.
Absolutely, yeah. When Obama first came into power, or first wanted to get into power to be president, he promised us all hope and change. And when he got in, gave us nothing more than disillusion and dismay. Why do you think it is that people always fall for the promises every time of these corporate-backed professional liars? Why is it, do you think?
Well, I don't know if I would necessarily agree with you that President Obama only gave us dismay. However, I feel disappointment, and I shared with many Americans the hope of change that many of us saw in President Obama as the peace president. And I entered the military, actually, in 2008 as he was taking office, and my entire time in service has been under the Obama administration. And I had hoped, like Obama, to be an agent of change in an institution that I thought direly needs change, the institution of the military. And I can imagine that President Obama has discovered that the institutions that he had hoped to transform resisted that transformation, much like I experienced that myself within the military. So I have a certain degree of empathy for the commander-in-chief, for the president. As far as the other part of your question, people, as a minister, I would say that people need something to believe in, and some people find that in their faith and their religion, and for others, they find it in the ideals cast by politicians, and I think that's what attracted many people to President Obama, much like it's attracted us as Americans to other dynamic and visionary leaders like John F. Kennedy.
Right, right, right. I do get the idea that your protest isn't so much about the U.S. Army policy. I get the feeling it's possibly more directed towards a military-industrial complex running the Army's policies. Would you tend to agree with that?
I would say that my position is that I support our military personnel, I support our veterans, but I resist what I call militarism. And that militarism, I think, has been well described by Andrew Bacevich, has written about it in a book called The New American Militarism. Jeremy Gunn has written a book called Spiritual Weapons, the Cold War and the Emergence of the American National Religion. Gunn talks about what he calls the American National Religion. It's an unholy trinity of governmental theism, military supremacy, and an understanding of capitalism as freedom. And I think that's the religion of the state. It's an established religion in the United States. And that is what I, as a religious leader, feel called to resist. It is that commitment that our country has made going back to the Cold War, to attain military supremacy and global dominance through military might. That is what I consider to be militarism, imperial overstretch, and that is what I refuse to support.
You mentioned earlier that some people weren't very happy with your idea to resign as a protest. You haven't been actually threatened or harassed in any way, shape, or form, I hope?
I actually haven't received anything directly. There's been a number of posts made in response to some of the media coverage that I've gotten because of my resignation. Initially, I read some of those posts, and then I just decided to stop because there was a lot of hostility expressed in those posts, and I found it just wasn't in the best interest of my emotional and spiritual health to engage in that.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. What are your thoughts on the murdered serviceman Pat Tillman, who was murdered in Afghanistan? Have you heard much about that in your time over there?
Well, I can't say I know much about the case other than what I've read. I think there's any death of anybody is tragedy. So if you want to know how I feel about it, it's tragic. The details of that particular case, I just don't know and I couldn't comment on.
Of course, of course. Do you think the corporations today are greatly to blame for the current state of the nation, the major corporations?
Well, I can say that it's been a part of American history, at least in the 20th century, that corporations have profited from our war making. It's certainly true of World War II and since then. So the military-industrial complex that Dwight D. Eisenhower warned about in his farewell address is a reality that is shaping our nation. And I think it extends beyond that to what I would call the military-industrial congressional complex, and perhaps even to include the academic complex because of the vast amount of so-called defense dollars that go into lobbying the corporations and their Washington lobbies to influence the militarization of U.S. foreign policy. So this is part of the systemic problem that I feel that we need to address.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. I see that, and I can feel that. I can sense the torment that you must have gone through having enacted this and done this, and I really do feel for you, sir, and I know there's a lot of people who do support you in your move to do that, because it takes a brave man to go against your orders, even though you know what you're doing is right. So other people might not see that. Did you feel that a lot of people haven't exactly gotten your message or understood why you did it?
Well, I've been quite honored with the response of the media. I never once sent out a press release. I shared my letter of resignation with a colleague who wrote a small piece for the newsletter of Veterans for Peace, and then it just took off like wildfire. And I have really been impressed with the quality of the journalism that has come out, not just from the more progressive media outlets, but also the right of center. Media outlets. I was impressed with Army Times and their story, and Military.com. So I'm quite pleased with the way my story has been told, and I feel like I've been treated quite fairly.
Wow, wow. Do stick with us, please, Captain Chris Antal. This is the People Speak Radio Show. I'm your host, Steve Johnson, talking with special guest, Chaplain Captain Chris Antal, live on radio, and we'll be right back with our guest and audience questions after this short message break.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Today's school libraries are filled with endless opportunities. With access to print and digital materials, the latest technologies, and the guidance of a school librarian, our children are empowered with the tools they need to succeed in school and beyond. I'm Julianne Moore. Join me in celebrating all of the ways that school libraries and librarians are transforming learning for our students. For more information on how you can become involved, visit the American Association of School Librarians at aasl.org.
Hi, I'm Richard Valzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the People Who Speak radio show, coming to you live across America and across the world. I'm your host for tonight, Steve Johnson, and we're back with a very special guest. You can call in with questions for our guest in this second half hour in the USA and Canada on 1-888-429-5471. Our special guest tonight is a former Army Reverend who has done the unthinkable, resigned the U.S. Army over drone strike policies. Welcome back there, Mr. Chris Antel, sir.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
Excellent. We've got a question here from one of the listeners. John from Canadian Rockies would like to know, did you register as a conscientious objector?
Yeah, that's a great question, John. The answer is no. As a chaplain, I didn't think it was necessary. Chaplains serve as noncombatants. Because we have an all-volunteer military, the only people that serve are people that volunteer, like myself. I didn't register.
Okay, we have a question from Mike in Liverpool. What would you think it looked like, in your opinion, if the American populace suddenly woke up to how corrupt their system actually is?
Well, Mike, I like the idea of waking up. Because I think a big part of the problem in American society is that we are not awake, that we are asleep, and that is enabled by the Hollywood and the entertainment culture that we have here that allows us to often to escape into other realities rather than deal with the reality that we are creating through our policies. So I like that idea of waking up, and I think that awakening American democracy and civic engagement is the way to redeem the soul of America, and it's certainly where I'm going to focus my energies and my ministry going forward.
We have a question from Bud Bundy in Pennsylvania. Have you seen WTC-7 building fall? Did you see the WTC-7 building come down on 9/11?
Yeah, is that Bud? Is that his name?
Yes, sir, Bud.
The answer is no. I was actually overseas. I was teaching in Korea in 2001 when that tragedy happened. So I was not an eyewitness, But a number of the soldiers that I deployed with were from New York City, and many of them were. And I understand from serving with those soldiers how much of a driving force that experience was for them to enlist. It was quite a trauma.
Right. We have a question from Reggie in Maryland. As a chaplain, have you experienced alternate universes like heaven or hell? Have you experienced anything spiritual in your time?
Well, I love your question, Reggie. Well, my response, coming from my tradition, is similar to Tolstoy, that the kingdom of heaven, kingdom of hell is within you. The closest thing to hell that I've experienced are things that we've created right here on Earth. The same is true for heaven. When I'm with my children and see the beauty in their face, that for me is heaven. When I see the horror that we're able to inflict on others through our military technology, like when I was in Hiroshima saw the photographs and listened to the testimony of the Hibakusha, for me that was hell.
Wow. We have a question from Buzzy Krongard in Langley, Virginia. Do you believe that war is a big scam?
Well, I love your question, Buzzy, and it brings to mind the famous book by Smedley Butler, War is a Racket. If you're using the word scam like Smedley Butler used racket, then I believe it is a scam for many. However, having served in the Army and been deployed in the combat zone, I can also see how, for many, war is a rite of passage. War is almost a mythic and sacred arena for people to challenge their limits, to experience glory, to demonstrate courage and honor. Those parts of the war experience make it, as James Hillman said, a terrible yet lovable thing.
Okay, yep. We have a caller in. We have Mike from California on line 4. Are you there, Mike?
Reverend.
Mike from California?
My question is, are you politically active, and which of the candidates most falls in line with who you think would be a good president, Trump, Hillary, Bernie Sanders?
Yeah, Mike, well, I am politically active. If you mean what I think you mean, which is engaged in current events and speaking in the public dialogue, I together with members of my congregation, write to our elected officials. Have just sent another letter to President Obama regarding the armed drone policy. So I consider that all of that politically active, and of course, as a citizen, I vote and participate in that sense as well. I'm torn with what I'm seeing and hearing in the elections, but I will say that I've registered as a Democrat, and I intend to vote that way.
Thank you.
All right, thanks very much for that question, Mike. We have another question here. Are you still bound by military law not to speak out against the U.S. Army?
Well, that's a great question, because I'm a minister, and I'm not active duty, then I can speak freely from my role as a citizen and as a minister. And that's what I'm doing in this capacity.
Okay. Well, this current president, President Barack Obama, a few years ago won the Nobel Peace Prize. Do you see that as a sure sign that our system is rigged to glorify criminals?
Well, I don't know if our system is rigged to glorify criminals. My interpretation of the presentation of the peace Nobel Peace Prize to President Obama, it was an investment in what could be and what perhaps a good part of the world hoped would be in this president. But now, at the end of his administration, I think that many of us are disappointed.
Okay, we have a question here from Frank in Missouri. Are you or ever were you a member of the CIA or approached by them to join their ranks?
I don't know, Frank. Are you recruiting me? No, I've never been approached by the CIA. I don't know if they'd want anything to do with me, but they may be listening to this phone call.
I'm sure the NSA listening post, Sierra Bravo, or is it Bravo Sierra, are always listening to our radio show. We've always got some really interesting guests and hosts on here. Now, next question. Obama did promise in his campaign, his initial campaign, to close Guantanamo Bay since coming into presidential office. Instead of doing so, he signed the Indefinite Detention Act, or the NDAA. What are your thoughts on such actions for somebody who says he wants to close Guantanamo, and yet it is still open today?
Yeah, again, it's a more disappointment and more sense of betrayal. I lament the rise of the drone wars as an attempt to kill rather than capture in order to avoid the trap of Guantanamo. But instead of the trap of capturing and imprisoning, we have now a kill list, and a list of dead numbering more than 7,000.
Do you not think it's hypocritical that the president that makes a daily presidential kill list, that makes an assassination list, will actually get a peace prize? Don't you find that hypocritical?
Well, as a religious leader, and I first acknowledge my own hypocrisy, and I don't see the real point in casting stones at this point.
Okay, sure. How important is it for critical thinking for the people to engage in?
Well, again, I go back to Eisenhower, who I think quite prophetically said that we need an awake and knowledgeable citizenry to counter the military-industrial complex. And an awake and a knowledgeable citizen is a citizen who can think critically and not accept the myth that our country has propagated, which I referred to earlier as American national religion. I mentioned earlier governmental theism. This is the idea of God and country, this conflation of God and country, and the idea that anything America does in the world is the will of God, is blessed by God. This, I think, is where we need to think critically and not accept these mythic civil religion. We need to speak authentically from our place of clear conscience and a place of from our religious traditions that, if used to their capacity, can empower us to speak against the nation and its policies. under the gospel or under the scriptures, whatever they may be in those traditions.
What, in your opinion, is the biggest danger facing our world today, in your opinion?
Well, I think on a spiritual and perhaps a psychological level, it's indifference, apathy. If I were to point to something beyond that, I think the threat of nuclear catastrophe is looming. Bulletin of Atomic Scientists have had a doomsday clock ever since the atomic bomb came into existence, and not so long ago turned the clock to 3 minutes before midnight, which is as close as it's been any time in the last 30 years. Midnight being doomsday, the destruction of the world through nuclear catastrophe. So for me, it's the threat of nuclear proliferation, the threat of loose nukes in countries like Pakistan getting into the hands of terrorists who want to use them indiscriminately against civilian populations.
Right, right. We have a question from Alex Jones in Sugar Land, Texas. Do you believe that 9/11 was an inside job?
I don't know, Alex. I can't say that I've really looked into those conspiracy theories as well as I know many people have. I'm familiar with those theories. It's hard to comprehend how something like that could happen. It certainly looks suspicious to me that this tragedy came at a time that seemed very convenient for the Bush administration. It came at a time where the administration needed some rationale for the defense budget. We needed an enemy, and we all know that the administration of the Bush administration was looking for some pretext to go into Iraq. All of these things loom for me as very suspicious. But as far as, an inside job, I just don't know.
Right, right. At least that's an honest answer. Thanks very much for sharing that with us. Can you tell us what has been the most memorable experience over the years in the work you have done thus far? What is the number one thing that sticks out in your mind as to the most memorable thing you've ever done?
Sure. Well, I could say that what I love about my work as a minister and what I was privileged to do as a chaplain during my time in service is really to be a companion with people to some of the darkest places of the soul, to be a confidant, and to bear witness to some of the most painful of human experiences. It has been a privilege and an honor to be trusted with people's sacred stories, and I think that's what I would describe as the most meaningful.
Fabulous, fabulous. Now, here on the People Speak show, we get a lot of former U.S. Marines who have gone into service and realized what they're doing isn't the right thing, and they've actually come out and talked about this. We've had Brad Hoff, we've had Ken O'Keefe, a lot of former U.S. Marines. Do you think going into the front line of battle, it actually wakes people up to, what am I doing here? Why am I shooting these people who are obviously not a problem, not a defense problem of the United States? Do you think that war itself actually wakes people up to what they're doing?
I've experienced that firsthand with many of the soldiers I've worked with, a kind of an awakening. I think that our culture, American culture, propagates a myth about war, about the military. It's imagined for us by Hollywood, and more so now by the video game industry, generations like my children's generation, they're growing up exposed to this war imagined by Hollywood and by the video game industry. And when war is experienced, as it has been for these Marines in Iraq or Afghanistan or soldiers, yes, that can be a wake-up call that this business of killing is savage. It can be a myth buster to actually have boots on the ground and experience what war is.
Right, right. We have a question from Earthplay in New Mexico. He would like to know, how does Chris feel about U.S. warships provoking Russia in the Black Sea?
Well, I'm just distressed at the whole prospect of it. As I said earlier, I believe that there is a place for military and national defense, but what we have in our nation is $600+ billion a year invested into, I can't even call it a Department of Defense. It, I think more accurately, is a Department of Global Power Projection and a Department of Permanent War. And what you describe going on, the provocations, is a part of that. It's this global power projection. It's this commitment to military supremacy that I think has distressed and outraged much of the world.
Absolutely. We have a question here from Paul Joseph Watson in Birmingham, UK. Chris, have you heard of the investment corporation called the Carlyle Group?
No, I haven't, Paul.
Oh, okay. Just to let you know, these are former prime ministers, former presidents from all around the world, including the Philippines and Burma, who actually put their money into the war-making machine. This is one of the largest investment group for defense contracts. It's known as the Carlyle Group and gets a lot of these former presidents.
Carlyle. Carlyle. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I'm aware of this kind of cycle of people from public life moving into defense contracting, and it happens in the United States as well. It's like a revolving door from political positions into leadership in military contracting corporations.
Yeah. And you don't agree with them that they should have that kind of power over the people?
Well, I think it's outrageous. Yes, I don't agree with that.
Fantastic. Now, division of the people factors strongly in the opinion of what is the primary concern of most people apart from mainstream media and politics being the obvious factors that divide people. What other things do you think are really dividing us as people?
Are you speaking about we, the people of the United States?
It could be we, the people of the earth. Do you think that federalism or nationalism is actually a factor of division? Or what other things do you think that are dividing us?
Well, I might want to rephrase that and address it in the sense of what can bring us together. I think that an affirmation of our common humanity, compassion, empathy, a commitment to the inherent worth and dignity of every person, a commitment to the interdependent web of existence that we're all a part of, which includes this fragile planet we call Earth. These are the things, if we can appreciate the fragility of our own lives and the life of this planet, I think can move us closer together.
Fantastic answer. We have a very good question here from Daniel Estelin in Madrid. Are you aware of the Bilderberg Group and what their plans are for humanity?
Daniel, I'm not. I'm embarrassed to say, but I don't know the group.
Oh, okay. Every year, the heads of the major corporations, including Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands, get together at a fancy hotel, and they talk about what's going to happen, who's going to be invaded next, and the price of oil. This thing is known as the Bilderberg Group, and it's been going on for the last, I think about 60-odd years. So very interesting. There's one thing maybe to look into.
Thank you, Daniel. Thank you.
What are your plans? Have you got lined up for the near future?
Well, we're planning a march that's going to begin in August in Philadelphia and be a march on Washington, and it's going to be a march that involves clergy and veterans, and it's a march to address accountability and transparency for the U.S. drone program. We're campaigning that the administration in the United States bring an immediate halt to U.S. Drone warfare until the recommendations of the Stimson Center on U.S. drone policy are sufficiently implemented. Part of our campaign is also to demand that the administration launch independent and impartial investigations into all cases where there are reasonable grounds to believe that drone strikes have resulted in unlawful killings, and to ensure that victims of these strikes have effective access to remedies, including compensation and rehabilitation.
Fantastic
answer. That's where I'm focusing as a citizen and as a minister, to try to bring this administration in its final days before the new administration to redeem itself and take some positive steps to halt this drone warfare.
Or at least bring it to some kind of account. That's fantastic. I agree completely. Thanks so much for being on the show today, Chris Antel, sir.
I'm so glad to have this conversation with you, Steve, and I appreciate all the listeners for your really thoughtful questions and comments.
That's certainly been fantastic. We'll have to get you on the show again. Join us coming up soon on the People Speak show when I talk with esteemed researcher Christopher Bolin, and coming soon, Henry Mackow. Stay tuned for those interviews. Big thanks go out to the producers, Mike, Doug, and Donald, to all my friends throughout the world, and all the guys who give me so much support. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. You can tune into my own channel on YouTube called Stop Funding Israel. But for me for now, take care and bye until next time.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief of I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.